Welcome to the Midday for a Thursday. I'm Norman Gilliland, and Henning Kragerug is back for, let's see, this is about your third visit to Wisconsin, isn't it?
It is, indeed.
And in both of the previous cases, you were playing with the Madison Symphony.
That's right, and also this time.
Back this time, let's see. And on one of those occasions, it was the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto, and on another occasion, it was the Sibelius.
That's true.
And now, something, as they say, a little different.
Yeah, one of the classics. It's a Mozart Violin Concerto number 4. A really youthful and charming piece he wrote when he was, I think, about 19 years old.
And what attracts you to the Mozart after those big works of Sibelius and Tchaikovsky?
Well, it was written a long time ago, but it's still as fresh as it was when it left his pen. It is very, very honest, but good-humored music. I think many composers can learn by Mozart. It's just the right amount of notes, not too long concerto, and so fresh.
Did Mozart provide cadenzas for those concertos?
He did not, so I have written my own cadenzas for this.
Now, speaking of writing your own, you have you've rendered even greater service in that department to Grieg, you're telling me, not once, but 3 times over.
Well, Edvard Grieg had plans of writing a violin concerto. Of course, his piano concerto is one of the most played concertos ever, and I've been mad at Grieg for not writing a violin concerto. But when I read that he actually planned to do that, and also know that Grieg arranged very many of his piano pieces for orchestra, for instance, the Holberg Suite and all the pieces.
Norwegian dances, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, well, that was actually done by another person, but granted by Grieg, so it's very important. Then I decided, well, if Grieg didn't write a violin concerto, we will do it for him. So together with another Norwegian, Bernt Simen Lund, we have arranged all the 3 sonatas. So now Grieg have 3 violin concertos. And this will be out on Naxos about May this year.
Where do you begin? To take a work that was written for piano and violin and change that piano part into an orchestral part? And how much change do you have to make for the violin part?
Well, on the violin part, I have decided not to make any change at all. So it's as the printed music. But naturally, when you perform it with orchestra, you tend to play it differently. But I wanted all those violinists who have actually learned the sonatas not to have to do anything new relearning, so it's they can just play it as is.
What about the cadenza for that, though?
Well, there isn't any cadenzas.
You just skip that part, okay.
Well, there are sort of cadenza-like things in the G major sonata, which is already written by Grieg. And then the next thing we did was to order all the pieces Grieg had in himself arranged to see what he did himself and what did he do. So I looked at the original piano version of the Holberg Suite together with his orchestra version, the same with the original song last spring with his version for string orchestra. And that was very, I learned a lot from that. And then basically what I've been doing actually for those 20 years I've been playing those sonatas, I always, when I play with piano, imagine how would it be orchestrated. So I already knew that the beginning of the second movement of the third sonata. Oh, that just begs for a flute. So that I sort of knew in my heart. But then, of course, it was the really creative thing is to find out what is suitable for a solo cello part, what is suitable for a clarinet, what kind of figures works well with the bassoon. So that was the creative orchestration. What can be pizzicato in the orchestra? What can be tremolo, sul ponte cello? So there is a lot of choices to do. We have though kept very near to the original piano part, so no new harmonies or sort of inventions there. So it's basically sounds, it's about the same notes, but since you have a orchestra available, of course, when we had a feeling that Grieg was short of fingers on the piano, you can add some more notes to that chord.
Yeah, that seems to be a problem. For example, Robert Schumann was described as wanting to put the whole orchestra in the pianist's hands.
Yes.
And so that there is always that kind of push-pull between piano and orchestra for a lot of composers.
Absolutely. And piano has a quite neutral sound, so so it tends well to be orchestrating from piano. It has been done successfully, of course, with for instance, Picture from an Exhibition, Mussorgskij Rimskij-Korsakov, and a lot of other pieces also. So I think this way, arranging from piano to orchestra, of course, it's a lot of work, but it works surprisingly well.
And that's coming out in May, you say?
Yes.
All right, we'll be looking for those. In the meantime, here is a Norwegian composer who did write a violin concerto, and more than one, as far as I can tell.
Three
of them. Christian Sinding, who was a slightly younger contemporary of Grieg's, but lived a lot farther into the 20th century, I think into the 40s.
Yeah, he died in 1941.
And this is the first movement of his violin concerto number 1 in A, which features Henning Kraggerud as the soloist with the Bornemisz Symphony. And before we get into this, now who's the symphony that you've recorded the Grieg with?
That is Tromsø Chamber Orchestra, I believe the most northern orchestra in the world, and I was recently made artistic director of this orchestra, so I'm doing a lot of work with them.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
And they should certainly have an insight into the Grieg psyche.
Yes, and for those listening now to the Sinding, you can see that he's quite inspired by the third movement of Bruch Violin Concerto No. 1 when you hear this first movement by his violin concerto.
Thank you. it's almost hard to imagine where he could go from there. It's so big. where we leave off at the end of the first movement there, that was the entire movement, but it's a kind of a seamless transition into the second. Of the Violin Concerto No. 1 in A by Christian Sinding, written in 1898, and featuring my guest today, Henning Kragerud, as the soloist with the Bournemouth Symphony. And I should mention, before our time slips away, that Henning Kragerud is in Wisconsin in order to perform with the Madison Symphony. This is the, it seems as if you're on an every 2 year pattern.
Yeah, something like that, yes.
Well, we'll look forward to the couple of years after this then. But on the program this Friday night at 7:30, Saturday night at 8, and Sunday afternoon at 2:30 at the Overture Center for the Arts in Madison, a good dose of Mozart, the overture to the Impresario, and then the piece that Henning will be playing, the Mozart Fourth Violin Concerto, and then also on the program, the Shostakovich Symphony No. 10 for a little variety, more than a little variety, this weekend with the Madison Symphony. So what other projects do you have going, and what are the pieces that are really, that you think people really clamor to hear these days as you travel around the world?
Well, I'm constantly recording different repertoire. My last recording for Naxos was Nordic Violin Favorites with music by Norwegian, Swedish, and Finnish composers. And that has certainly been very popular in our part of the world, and where I include Sibelius Humoresques, and I play those a lot. People tend to not know these less smaller pieces by Sibelius as well as the concerto, but they are small masterpieces. Then I have also recorded now a Munch suite. This year it's 150 years since Edvard Munch, the painter, was born. And so we asked 15 different composers, both Norwegian, Swedish, American, to write one movement each for one of his paintings.
Are you getting a lot of screams, or are you...
No, actually, we had chosen 15 other paintings, so it wasn't... Scream isn't part of it, but Aaron J. Kernis, he wrote for A Dance of Life. So anyway, this will be also out in the records on the label C-Max, the same I recorded Isai solo sonatas for in about the summertime. So in Norway now, Edvard Munch is celebrated a lot.
Sure.
He's, of course, our most famous painter. So this Munch suite with 15 different composers, this is a project for people interested in more challenging music. I asked all of those composers to write me pieces, but I had only a few months to learn them, so I said, please don't write too difficult, and they all ignored that. So I had to practice the whole time.
There seems to be, between violinists and composers, this long-standing tradition of too easy, too hard. I mean, the Barber Violin Concerto is an example.
Yes.
And I don't know why that is, but I guess people tend to think that either violinists have endless, technique that they can draw on, or else that they just somehow want to show them up.
Well, in this case, I think most of the composers knew that I had recorded the Isai solo sonatas, and when they listened to that recording, they thought, oh, he can do that. So
difficult stuff, that Isai.
Yes, it is very difficult, but great music. But anyway, my advice to all composers is to write as easy as they can. And then, of course, when art forces them to write difficult, it has to be like that. But it's no point of writing more difficult than necessary. I think very many of the really, really great pieces are just on the balance of that. You have Brahms Concerto, Tchaikovsky Concerto. They struggled in the beginning for the first 20 years. They weren't played particularly well, and they are just on the limit because you want the artist, the violinist, to sort of be able to sing with the instrument, and you have to do that sometimes in spite of all the notes. So this is the nice thing with playing Mozart, that it's actually written. He said himself he didn't want to write too virtuosic music.
Well, and Mozart was also, if you read in some of the letters that he wrote to his father in particular, he was aware of the audience. saying, you know, the audience will like this. The performer will like it for different reasons, but the audience will like this.
Yeah, actually, Mozart wanted to write more advanced music harmonically than was usually accepted at his time. But he didn't want to write too difficult, though, because he wasn't interested in virtuosic for its own sake.
Let's hear some more ascending. This is a miniature. We've mentioned some miniatures. This little elegy that he wrote. And in this case, it's just you, Henning Kraggerud, and the pianist. And what sense do we get of ascending from this? This is actually one of two CDs you've done of miniature.
Yes, together with Christian Hadland, this pianist. He wrote probably 8 CDs worth of this type of music. It was incredibly popular by the publishers because it was a great demand for people to play at home.
Amateurs.
So it's written very, very pleasantly in more salon style, classical, entertaining music of that time, but beautiful.
Elegy by Christian Sinding. Elegy by Christian Sinding. Do you do all of your recording with the same violin?
Well, all I've done the last 6 years have been with the violin you just heard. That's a Guarneri del Gesso from 1744, the same I will use on the concerts on this weekend.
And how did you find that violin?
Well, it used to belong to a pupil of Karl Flesch, a Jewish girl in Europe, and she had to flee the Nazis in the 30s, and she ended up in America. And then her violin just ended up in a collection not being played until it was purchased by Dextra Musica, who owns the instrument, and which I borrow it from.
It's somehow endlessly fascinating that an instrument that old can play all the repertory, I mean, right on up through the 21st century.
Yes, I mean, when those instruments were built, they had a shorter neck. So when it was about, I would guess, 60, 70 years of it, the violin's life, it was rebuilt with a longer neck and a little bit higher tension, higher angle of the fingerboard, and a bit higher bridge. So it lends itself then excellently to a modern repertoire. It's a very powerful instrument with a lot of sound.
You're hearing a lot of great young violinists out there when you travel around. And do you do any teaching?
I do a lot of teaching, so especially in Norway, where I'm a professor at Barrathus Music Institute, sort of a small-time position, though, because I travel so much. So we have a young generation of fantastically talented violinists in Norway, and many other places of the world, there are also a great amount of talents coming up. What I'm fighting for, though, is to get back to the old days, where you have more composers who are players and more players who are composers. So this is a personal sort of vendetta or something I'm working on. I think that would make the music scene more alive and better. So this is the thing I miss about the modern, that it tends to be separating composers and violinists or musicians too much.
That's intriguing, because certainly if you go back to the 19th century, early 20th, there were some really heavy hitters who were soloists, violinists, and composers. I mean, Paganini comes to mind right away, of course.
And also worth to mention is that most of the great composers we have had in classical music all sat on stage regularly playing concerts. And I think, so people ask, why don't we have really the Mozarts and the Beethovens and things like that? I think it's unhealthy that you have people who are only composers and people who are only players. You are supposed to merge this as it was done in the old days. So I'm encouraging all young players who might hear this, start to compose, even if you think you cannot do that. This is what I do with my pupil: improvise, compose, do fun, creative stuff, because then you can also read the score from the composer's point of view.
That's true, and the composer would have a sense of what it's like to play that thing, be on stage.
Absolutely.
And have the interaction with the audience and the orchestra. We have some more from Henning Kragerud now, but in the context with a violist and a cellist, and you're playing Mozart with the Madison Symphony this weekend, that fourth violin concerto. We have some Mozart here. This is a divertimento for string trio. It's one of the almost one of the last things that Mozart wrote, and you say this one movement in particular is Mozart at his peak.
Yes, Mozart was known when he had piano students playing his own pieces. He would sit next to them and improvise on top. And I always people said that was the nicest and it wasn't written down. And this movement, you can have a glimpse of that. It's a variation movement starting very, very simple. But later, when you listen to the violin, it is as if Mozart was sitting next to his piano student improvising on top of the theme. So I think it's one of Mozart's best tremolo music works.
Yeah, we'll hear the minuet that follows in this divertimento in E-flat. And performing with violinist Henning Kragerud is violist Lars Ander Tomter, and the cellist is Christoph Richter.
Thank you.
two movements from a late work by Mozart, his Divertimento in D for violin, or in E-flat, I should say, for violin, viola, and cello. Henning Kragerud was the violinist, Lars Ender Tomter the violist, and Christoph Richter was the cellist. And Henning Kragerud is in town to perform with the Madison Symphony this weekend. Three concerts that will include something by Mozart, namely the fourth violin concerto. Here's some more from Christian Sinding, a composer, as I mentioned, who is a slightly younger contemporary of Grieg, but lived up until 1941, and so we get some, I will say, modern qualities that we wouldn't find in Grieg. And did you say you had three CDs of Sinding?
Yeah, I have recorded three, or something like that, three works of CD of his music, but he has composed a lot for violin and piano, and this we are going to hear now, Romance, yes? Mm-hmm. It's not very modern sounding, but very, very charming music, I think. Thank you.
Up to his name, doesn't it? A very romantic, sweet piece from Christian Sinding. Have you recorded it all, everything that Sinding wrote?
No, I actually read through all of it with this pianist. So he has at least 8 hours for violin and piano, but we picked out what we thought was the very best in two CDs. And then I've done about one CD of his music for violin and orchestra as well.
Was Sinding one of those violinist composers that you're hoping we'll have more of?
Well, he was certainly both pianist and violinist, but not at a very high level. So I wouldn't say he totally qualifies to that, but he was a musician and he knew about sitting on stage, at least.
You did some arranging of this little waltz of Sinding.
Yeah, the one we are going to hear now is originally a piece for four-hand piano. But it's so charming, we just had to do it on this CD.
Christian Sinding, that's just one of a fair number of miniatures that he wrote, but in this case, some input from Henning Kragerud, the violinist, and his pianist, Christian Hadland, with that waltz in G, and we'll look forward to those Grieg violin concertos.
Well, thanks.
Somebody out there tuned in late saying, what Grieg violin concertos? Well, there will be three of them coming out in May.
F major, G major, and C minor concertos.
There you go. Find out what that's all about. Well, Henning Kragerud, thanks for coming back to the midday. It's the third visit, and we'll look forward to the next one.
Well, it's been a pleasure to be here again. Hope to be back.